The matter was closed. I knew him so well, that great infuriating oaf whom I loved with all my heart. He meant exactly what he said, and would cleave to it at any cost. "Then what will you do, damn your stubborn heart?" I flared at him. "Nothing that I say has any weight with you. Do you want to face this on your own? Are you suddenly too wise to heed my counsel?" "I am willing to take your counsel just as long as it has sense to it." He reached out and drew me down beside him. "Come, Taita, help us. Lostris and I need you now as never before. Don't desert us. Help us find the honourable way." "Oh, but I fear there is no such thing," I sighed, my emotions bobbing and spinning like a piece of flotsam caught in the Nile flood. "But if you will not seize the crown, then you dare not stay here. You must sweep Lostris up in your arms and bear her away." He stared at me in the moonlight. "Leave Egypt? You cannot be serious. This is my world. This is Lostris' world." "No," I reassured him. "That is not what I had in mind. There is another pharaoh in Egypt, one who has need of warriors and honest men. You have much to offer such a king. Your fame in the lower kingdom is as great as it is here at Karnak. Place Lostris on the deck of the Breath of Horus and send your galley flying northwards. No other ship can catch you. In 10 days, with this wind and current, you can present yourself at the court of the Red Pharaoh in Memphis and swear allegiance to—" "By Horus, you were determined to make a traitor of me yet," he cut across me. "Swear allegiance to the usurper, you say? Then what of the allegiance I swore to the true Pharaoh Mimosa? Does that count for nothing with you? What kind of man am I that I can make the same oath to every king or renegade that crosses my path? An oath is not something to be bartered or reclaimed, Taita. It is for life. I gave my oath to the true Pharaoh Mimosa. That true Pharaoh is the same one who will marry your love and will order the strangling rope to be twisted around your neck," I pointed out grimly. And this time even he wavered. "You are right, of course. We should not stay in Karnak. But I will not make myself a traitor or break my solemn oath by taking up the sword against my king." "Your sense of honour is too complicated for me." I could not keep the tone of sarcasm from my voice. "All I know is that it bodes fair to make corpses of us all. You have told us what you will not do. Now tell me what you will do to save yourself and rescue my Lady Lostris from a hateful fate." "Yes, old friend, you have every right to be angry with me. I asked for your help and advice. When you gave it freely, I scorned it. I beg your patience. Bear with me a while longer." Tanos sprung to his feet and began to prowl about like the leopard in Pharaoh's menagerie, back and forth muttering to himself, shaking his head and bunching his fists, as if to face an adversary. At last he stopped in front of me. "I am not prepared to play the traitor, but with a heavy heart I will force myself to play the coward. If Lostris agrees to accompany me, and only if she agrees, then I am prepared to take flight. I will take her away from this land we both love so well." "Where will you go?" I asked. "I know that Lostris can never leave the river. It is not only her life and mine, but her god also. We must stay with Hapi, the river. That leaves only one direction open to us." He raised his right arm, gleaming with muscle in the moonlight, and pointed south. "We will follow the Nile southwards into the depths of Africa, into the land of Kush and beyond. We will go up beyond the cataracts into the unfathomed wilderness where no civilized man has ever gone before. There, perhaps, if the gods are kind, we will carve out another Tamari for ourselves." "Who will be your companions?" "Kratas, of course, and those of my officers and men who are game for the adventure. I'll address them tonight and give them the choice. 5 ships, perhaps, and the men to work them. We must be ready to leave by dawn. Will you go back to the necropolis and fetch Lostris to me?" "And me?" I asked quietly. "You'll take me with you." "You?" He laughed at me. Now that the decision was made, his mood took flight. High as the baiting falcon launched from the gloved fist. "Would you truly give up your garden and your books, your pageants and your building of temples? The road will be dangerous and the life hard. Do you truly want that, Taita?" "I could not let you go alone. Without my restraining hand upon your shoulder, what folly and danger would you lead my mistress into if I were not there to guide you?" "Come," he ordered, and clapped me on the back. "I never doubted that you would come with us. I know that Lostris would not leave without you anyway, Enough chatter. We have work to do. First, we will tell Kratos and the others what we intend, and let them make their choice. Then you must go back to the necropolis and fetch Lostris while I make the preparations for our departure. I'll send a dozen of my best men with you, but we must hurry. It is past midnight and well into the third watch. Silly, romantic fool that I am. But I was as excited as he was as we hurried back to the regiment's encampment below the temple and the causeway. I was so elated that my sense of danger was dulled. It was Thanos who picked out the sinister movement in the moonlight ahead of us and seized my arm and drew me beneath the shelter of a stunted carob tree. "An armed party," he whispered. And I saw the glint of bronze spearheads. There was a large band of men, 30 or 40, I estimated. "Bandits, perhaps? Or a raiding party from the Lower Kingdom?" Thanos growled. And even I was alarmed by the stealthy behaviour of the armed men ahead of us. They were not using the towpath of the canal, but creeping through the open fields, spreading out to surround Thanos' encampment on the river bank. "This way." With a soldier's eye for ground, he picked out a shallow wadi that ran down to join the river, and he steered me to it. We jumped down and ran doubled over until we reached the perimeter of the camp. Then Thanos sprung out of the wadi and roused the camp with a bellow. "Stand to arms! On me, the Blues! Form on me!" It was the rallying cry of the Blue Crocodile Guards, and it was taken up at once by the sergeants of each company. Instantly the camp boiled to life. The men sleeping round the fires leapt to their feet and snatched up their stacked weapons, while the officers' tents burst open as though the men within had never slept, but had been waiting, tensed and ready, for Thanos' command. Sword in hand, they raced to their stations, and I saw Kratos in the forefront. I was amazed by the swiftness of their response, even though I knew that these were all battle-tested veterans. Before I could draw a dozen excited breaths, they had formed in their phalanxes, with overlapping shields and long spears thrust outwards facing the darkness. The strange band out there in the night must have been as startled as I was by this militant display, for although I could still make out the vague shapes of many men and the gleam of their weapons in the gloom, the murderous charge we were all expecting from them never materialized. The instant that Thanos had his formations in line, he ordered the advance. We had often debated the advantages of offensive action over defense, and now the massed squadrons moved forward, poised to break into a full charge at Thanos' command. It must have been a daunting spectacle to the men out there in the darkness, for a voice hailed us with an edge of panic in its tone. "We are Pharaoh's men on the king's business. Hold your attack." "Hold hard, the Blues," Thanos stopped the menacing advance and then called back. "Which Pharaoh do you serve, the red usurper or the true Pharaoh?" "We serve the true king, the divine Mimosa, ruler of the upper and lower kingdoms. I am the king's messenger." "Come forward, King's Messenger, who creeps around in the night like a thief. Come forward and state your business," Thanos invited him. But under his breath he told Kratos, "Be ready for treachery. The smell of it is thick in the air. Have the fires built up. Give us light to see." Kratos gave the order, and bundles of dry rushes were flung onto the watchfires. The flames leapt up, and the darkness was thrown back. Into this ruddy glow the leader of the strange band stepped forward and shouted, "My name is Nita, best of 10,000. I am the commander of Pharaoh's bodyguard. I bear the hawk seal for the arrest and detention of Thanos, Lord Harab." "By Horus, he lies in his teeth," Kratos growled. "You are no felon with a warrant on your head. He insults you and the regiment. Let us at them, and I'll thrust the hawk seal up between his buttocks." "Hold," Thanos restrained him. "Let us hear the fellow out." He raised his voice again. "Show us the seal, Captain Nita." Nita held it aloft, a small statuette in glistening blue faience, in the shape of the royal hawk. The hawk seal was the king's personal empowerment. The bearer acted with all the force and validity of Pharaoh himself. On pain of death, no man could question or hinder him in the course and commission of the royal business. The bearer answered only to the king. "I am Thanos, Lord Harab," Thanos conceded, "and I acknowledge the hawk seal." "My lord, my lord," Kratos whispered urgently. "Do not go to the king. It will mean your certain death. I have spoken to the other officers. The regiment is behind you. Nay, the entire army is behind you. Give us the word. We'll make you king before the new day breaks." "My ear is deaf to those words," Thanos told him softly, but with a weight of menace in his tone more telling than any growl or bellow. "But only this once, Kratos, son of Madum. Next time that you speak treason, I will deliver you to the king's wrath with my own hands. He turned from Kratos to me and drew me a little to one side. It is too late, old friend. The gods frown on our enterprise. I must trust myself to the king's good sense. If he is truly a god, then he will be able to look into my heart and see for himself that it contains no evil. He touched my arm, and that light gesture was to me more significant than the warmest embrace. Go to Lostris. Tell her what has happened. Tell her why it has happened. Tell her I love her, and whatever happens, I will do so throughout this life and the next. Tell her I will wait for her, to the ends of eternity, if need be. Then Thanos ran his sword back into the scabbard at his side, and with empty hand stepped forward to meet the bearer of the hawk seal. I stand ready to do the king's bidding, he said simply. Behind him his own men hissed and growled and rattled their swords against their bucklers, but Thanos turned and quieted them with a gesture and a frown, then strode out to confront Nita. The king's guard closed in around him, and then at a trot they moved away along the towpath of the canal back towards the necropolis. The camp was filled with angry, bitter young men when I left it, and followed Thanos and his escort at a discreet interval. When I reached the necropolis, I went directly to my Lady Lostri's quarters. I was distressed to find them deserted, except for three of her little black maids, who, in their usual lazy and lackadaisical manner, were packing the last of their mistress's clothing into a cedarwood chest. "Where is your mistress?" I demanded. And the eldest and most insolent of them picked her nose as she gave me an airy reply. "Where you can't reach her, eunuch." The others tittered at her powers of repartee. They are all of them jealous of my favour with my Lady Lostris. Answer me straight, or I'll whip your insolent backside, you little baggage. I had done so before, so she relented and muttered sulkily, They have taken it to Pharaoh's own harem. You have no influence there. Despite your missing balls, the guards will never let you pass amongst the royal women. She was right, of course, but still I had to make the attempt. My mistress would need me now, as much as she ever had in all of her life. As I feared, the guards at the gate to the king's harem were intractable. They knew who I was, but they had orders that no one, not even the closest members of Lostris' retinue, was to be allowed to go to her. It cost me a gold ring, but the best I could achieve, even with that extravagance, was the promise that one of the guards would take my message to her. I wrote it out on a scrap of papyrus parchment, a bland little attempt at encouragement. I dared not relate all that had befallen us, nor the peril in which Thanos now stood. I could not even mention him by name, and yet I had to reassure her of his love and protection. As an investment, it was not worth the price I was forced to pay. Hardest of all to bear, I learned later that my gold had been entirely wasted, and that she never received the message. Is there no man we can trust in this perfidious world? I was not to see either Thanos or my Lady Lostris again, until the evening of the last day of the festival of Osiris. The festival ended in the temple of the god. It seemed once more that all the populace of Greater Thebes were packed into the courtyards. We were jammed so tightly that we could scarcely breathe in the press and the heat. I was feeling wretched, for I had slept little for two nights in succession on account of the worry and the strain. Apart from the uncertainty of the fate of Thanos, I had been further burdened by my lord Intef with the onerous duty of arranging the wedding ceremony of the king to his daughter, a duty that ran so contrary to my own desires. Added to which, I was parted from my mistress, and I could scarcely bear it. I do not know how I came through it. Even the slave boys were concerned about me. They declared that they had never seen my beauty so impaired or my spirits so low.